Sacramento. 3-on-1. Bagley the step. Bagley with the dunk. And you can put it in the book and send it to the left.
There it is. Buddy Hield alone at the top of the Kings record book.
Oh, I like to see Fox Force 5 in the open court.
Fox into the lane. Oh, if you don't like that, you don't like Kings basketball.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brendan Nunez, and I have my usual co-host here, Rich. How are you doing today, man?
What up, Brendan? I am doing pretty good, feeling optimistic about the future of our Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, with this Luke Walton hiring, that happened pretty quickly. I mean, we put out an emergency podcast right after the Jaeger firing, and what was it, not even 24 hours later, that Luke was officially the head coach of the Sacramento Kings?
Yeah, that's right. You asked me at the time how long until the Kings hire a new coach, and I said, I think it'll be a little while, just out of respect to Dave Jaeger. And it's another take of mine that you can just mark down as wrong, because boy oh boy, this was lightning fast.
Yeah, we'll pretend like that never happened. And then they have a press conference. I think that you just got the update on your phone at 1 p.m. today. Luke signed until the 2022-23 season, the exact same length as Vlade's contract. So to me, that's kind of Vlade saying, you know, if this doesn't work out, then I'm out the same time as Luke.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if this doesn't work, they're probably both gone. I don't know. Maybe that's too hot of a take. I would imagine that if things really go south, then it might be both of their heads rather than just giving Vlade another chance to hire another coach. Yeah. What do you think? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I mean, Vlade, what kind of threw me off is that they didn't even talk to other coaches. Like, Vlade is so set on this is his guy that it took one interview for them to sign that contract, at least from what we can tell. And there was no talking to Ettore Messina, to Monty Williams, anybody else at all. So Vlade thinks this is the guy and was able to convince ownership that this is our coach moving forward. This is the best option. We don't even need to talk to anybody else. I think that's really what it comes down to, yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw Tim Maxwell, friend of the show, say that Vlade is essentially staking his reputation on Luke right now. And that is how it feels a little bit. You know, if they had gone through the due diligence of interviewing four or five guys or ladies, then maybe you can kind of push this decision on other people. You can say this was a group decision. I know that Grant had said in the past that Jaeger was not Vlade's decision. But it's clear cut. It's clear as day that this was Vlade's choice, his number one choice. And yeah, it's going to reflect a lot on his decision making as GM.
Yeah. And how do you feel about Luke as a coach? I mean, he had that little warrior stint where he was assistant for a while and took over for Kerr when he had back problems during that 73-9 season, and then spent the last 3 years coaching the Lakers. But what were your impressions from seeing him coach?
I feel very good about Luke Walton. I've been high on him for a while, higher than most, I'd say. You know, both of us, we grew up in the Bay Area. So I think we watch a little bit more Warriors basketball than most. Not as close as we watch the Kings. But, you know, the 39-4 record that he was able to go out there and get with the Warriors, including the 24-0 start, that's not nothing. People want to dismiss that like, no, that's just the Warriors. The Warriors are that good. They were bound to go 24-0, and Luke had nothing to do with that. That's nonsense. Like, you don't go 24-0 without your coach doing something right. I'm not saying it's everything. I'm not saying that that's the most amazing accomplishment of any coach ever. It could probably be more impressive to go 14-10 with a really, really bad team with the league's worst team than it might be to go 24-0 with the league's best team, but it still is a positive sign.
Yeah, and I mean, Kerr already had the system in place, but he was able to run it correctly. And to hear players like Draymond Green come out and say that Luke is an amazing coach, You saw Steph really hype him up. He has experience with Harrison Barnes, who was on that Warrior team that we're talking about. So to me, I'm very curious to see if Barnes decides to restructure and likes the addition of Luke Walton. I feel like that'll almost be a little bit of a telling sign on how he feels about Luke after having spent, his first two, three years of his career with Luke somehow in the management or assistant coach under Golden State. I think that he's more of a player's coach a bit. And Vlade obviously has a very good relationship with him. Vlade made it clear in the press conference where they said bye to Jaeger that he wanted a coach that could sit next to him in making decisions and they could agree on things moving forward. And I feel like Luke is going to be great to do that. It's more of a, I want to say, enjoyable personality in regards to how the players are going to be. I know that Steve Kerr has had a lot to say about him. I've heard nothing but absolutely positive things about Luke's coaching style and his personality and how he interacts with anybody that he runs into, really.
That is definitely how this is being pitched. That's how this move is being spun, if you're okay with that term, at least from a PR perspective. I think there's been some articles, you know, the articles that have come out recently, the talk that's come out of the Kings organization is that Dave Jaeger was a great coach, but hard to work with. And the pitch here is that Luke Walton is also a great coach and not as hard to work with. So I guess I'm just buying into that, but I do kind of just believe it. I don't know. I see the way that Jaeger acted around the media, and that's all I really get to see from him. I don't see him in private, with the door closed, how he talks to his players, how he talks to Vlade in their private meetings, that sort of thing. All I see is him in front of cameras, and you know, he didn't like talking to the media at all. You could tell that he was handing out death stares to everybody. Like, you know, even for basic questions, Dave Jaeger seemed like kind of a grump. And that's kind of a weird way to put it, but he was kind of a grumpy dude and didn't take anyone's shit, you know, and that's cool. But if this is the spin, it's working on me because Luke really does seem like an affable guy. And I know Steve Kerr was talking about how he's one of his best friends. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. Luke just seems like he gets along with everyone, and I do like his coaching resume. We can talk about that a little more. How do you feel about his time in Los Angeles?
I think that he did a good job slowly progressing that team. I do kind of want to ignore this past season because there was the drama of LeBron coming in, literally everybody on that young roster getting attached to an Anthony Davis trade. And the roster construction was not good to me. There was a lot of one-year guys that didn't fit very well, like a Michael Beasley, Rajon Rondo, that just didn't make sense to me, Lance Stevenson as well. So kind of disregarding that one. I mean, his first year, a very young team that had a lot of work to do. They were sitting at 26 wins. And then the next season, you saw them actually take a jump up to 35 and play some good defense with not exactly the most talented team. I think they had good defenders, but a lot of it does go credit to Luke that they play extremely high pace. They have every season that he's been there and they shoot a lot of threes. I feel like systematically that he's going to fit really well here. And his time in LA, disregarding this season, he was progressing upwards, that the players seemed to like him, and I think he just got kind of a scapegoat treatment this last season.
I completely agree with what you're saying there, and especially the point to this past year with the Lakers. I would like to strike that from the record as well. I don't feel like this last season was representative of Coach Luke Walton's abilities because, A, you signed LeBron, and of course LeBron is going to help any team that he's on, but he's also going to take over any team that he's on. I have often felt like he is the head coach of the teams that he plays for. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but it really does feel like, you know, LeBron's calling the shots. And then obviously you got Pelinka and Magic Johnson not doing a good job in the front office outside of signing LeBron and maybe grabbing JaVale McGee at the vet minimum. That was pretty much all they did good. They signed, like you said, just a ragtag team of dudes that didn't make sense around LeBron. And they just kind of handed that to Luke, like, all right, you're expected to win a championship, essentially. Maybe not that much, but you're definitely expected to make the playoffs. We've dealt you a really tough hand. And then half his team gets injured. You know, I don't really – it's not on him. I want to talk about the 2016-17 and 2017-18 seasons, the two previous seasons for the Lakers, because I actually see a lot of similarities between those first 2 years for Luke and these last 2 years for Dave Joerger. Really, in 2016-17, obviously the records are similar. You have a 26-win team in LA the first year, but man, that team was awful. Like, that team, that roster was awful. Jordan Clarkson led the team in minutes, who is bad. I'm sorry, but he's not a good player. You got a 22-year-old Julius Randle, a 19-year-old Brandon Ingram, and a 20-year-old D'Angelo Russell as kind of the rest of that core. And yeah, those are guys that are good now. D'Angelo Russell obviously coming into his own in Brooklyn. Julius Randle has been putting up some really nice numbers in New Orleans. But these guys are super, super, super young. And I'm sorry, but like, rookies just aren't that good. Even second year guys aren't supposed to be that good. A 19-year-old Brandon Ingram, he can't be a huge difference maker. A 20-year-old D'Angelo Russell, he can't be a huge difference maker. We saw it with Fox. Point guards in their first year, they just struggle. That's just how it is sometimes. And that carries over to the second year as well. And then the rest of this roster, like Luol Deng, Nick Young, that's your sixth man there. 5'6", Larry Nance, Timofey Mozgov is your starting center. It's just not great. And I think that that reminds me a little bit of the Kings last year. You know, Zach Randolph really brought that team down. There just wasn't a great glut of talent in Sacramento. And to me, that felt like kind of, you know, Dave Joerger was hoping to work for the future there. And then 2017-18, this is the year that I feel very impressed by. This is the 35-win season. I want to let you get a word in on this, but what were your thoughts of not this most recent season for Luke, but the 35-win season before that?
Well, I think he did a good job with the roster that he had. Like you said, I mean, it obviously was improved over that previous one. I think bringing in Lonzo Ball did a lot for them, especially defensively also, and being able to move the ball around. But he got a year under his belt of being a head coach, and he got a little bit of a better roster around him that the defense picked up, and they really overperformed for what that roster was and what the expectations were after that season that you just broke down. So I think that Luke deserves a lot of credit for that one too. It wasn't necessarily just players taking a next jump, like you touched on Brandon Ingram, extremely raw talent that we didn't really see take a jump until this season. That last year, a lot of people were having crazy amount of doubt in him. I think that he did a really good job of making that team play good defense and adjusting to modern basketball of shooting a lot of threes, realized that their strength was going to be running in transition, especially with Lonzo Ball, and just did a great job of playing to their strengths. And like I said, they overperformed on that year. They were a bright spot. They got a lot of Laker fans excited again. And I think that he can do the exact same style with this Sacramento team.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, you know, the roster was a little bit better, I guess you can say. But again, I mean, I am really impressed by how well he did with these players. I'm going to read off the first nine names on this roster by minutes played. KCP, Kyle Kuzma, Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Brooke Lopez, Josh Hart, and Jordan Clarkson. Only one of those guys was older than 25 that year. And you got yourself a rookie point guard who, again, as we know, they don't contribute to winning basketball almost ever. A lot of these guys got 20, 20, 21, 22, 22. To get to 35 wins in the West with a group of essentially 24, 25-year-olds or younger, that's really impressive to me. It is.
Yeah, and there was no sort of drama coming out of LA in regards to Luke specifically. While this year you saw that he got into it with Michael Beasley, there were talks of him and Magic Johnson going at the beginning of the year. To me, these guys like Beasley, like Stevenson, and Rondo's a big one to me. Obviously, LeBron as well. I mean, Luke Walton's only 39 years old. He's only, I want to say, 6 years removed from being in the league. I feel like there's a different level of respect when these guys are a little bit younger compared to some of these players that might have even played the exact same time as him. So I feel like that the fact that this Kings team is so young comparably to that Lakers team is going to bode well for a super young head coach in Luke Walton, and they get to grow together.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I really do see that as the path that we're on now. Let me just kind of, this is kind of a throwaway thought, but do you think that Ty Lue is a good coach?
I don't know, because you touched on the LeBron thing. I feel like there's only one way to play with LeBron on your team. So how much did he really have to coach there? You know, I mean, maybe it's a little more so managing personalities. I wouldn't necessarily say he's a bad coach, but I wouldn't give him the good label either. It's a little undecided there for me. Almost the same way that we talk about Luke, where it's not, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, that's the point that I wanted to make there, is that I think when LeBron is your star player and your entire basketball operation is built around him, the coach just gets an incomplete grade, because Ty Lue has a ring, right? So, I mean, what are, like, that's, and to say that he's not a good coach, or that we aren't sure he's a good coach, you know, I don't know. I think that is the deal here. I think that Luke just gets an incomplete for last year. And, we, you know, what happens when LeBron wins a championship, we don't say, hey, this coach was good or bad. We say, hey, LeBron's an incredibly dominant player, and he's, you know, he's amazing. We don't talk about the coach. And to me, that adds up.
Yeah. I wanted to play this clip of Steve Kerr. He got asked about Luke getting the head coaching job of the Kings, and I wanted to give everyone an opportunity to listen to this real quick. So here it is.
Another opportunity, and what are the Kings getting?
Well, I'm happy for Luke. Sad for Dave Yeager. I think Dave has done a fantastic job there the last few years, and he really helped establish a great foundation that Luke's going to inherit. Luke's one of my best friends. He's an incredible basketball mind. He's a wonderful human being. And he's got the right temperament to not only coach a team, but to get along with management, to manage in every direction. And he's the guy you want to go to battle with. And so they are getting a great coach and a great man.
Has he improved much as a coach from the time that you first joined forces with him in that first year?
Yeah, I think we all improve just through experience, you know, and we have to feel it. I've only been coaching 5 years, and, you know, I know I learn things every year, and Luke's the same way. He's a willing learner. He's not, he doesn't think he knows it all. And he'll bring a great staff with him. And, you know, that Kings team is really impressive and exciting. And I love their future. And I think they got the right coach for the job. I think Luke's best quality is he's got a great blend of competitiveness and laid-back Southern California vibe. You know, and it's a really good combination, because you want to win, and your players need to see how much you want to win, but you can't be too emotional in this job and too up and down, and Luke will always keep an even keel. So he'll do a great job there.
Yeah, so obviously, like Steve Kerr said, I mean, it's a big help that Luke is coming into an established system that Dave Yeager put in place, discovering that pace is the identity of this team and really basing that around Fox. And one of the things that stood out to me is that he really talked up about how Luke is going to push you in the right way, but also have a level head throughout it. And does it strike you weird that none of the players have said anything? Like, obviously, I mean, nobody it's not regular for people to come out on social media necessarily and say things, and the Kings guys don't seem to do that too often. But I feel like since this entire end of the season, Jaeger firing, Luke getting hired, all the players have been extremely quiet.
Yeah, it's incredibly weird, Brendan. It's freaking me out, man. I don't know what to make of it.
Like, I saw Buddy like a couple tweets, and he put out that eyes emoji, but I just don't, and that was after Luke got hired, and he was liking things that were talking Luke up, but there's been no, like, thank you, Dave Jaeger.
Yeah.
Which seems weird. I mean, they were with this guy for 3 years.
The only way that I can interpret that is that they are happy, I guess. I mean, it seems a little bit disrespectful not to say, hey, thanks, man, for, you know, a guy like Fox who came into the league as, you know, I mean, he's a rookie. He's still a question mark. And now he's, you know, with Dave leaving, he's on the brink of superstardom at least. And to not be like, hey, man, you know, thank you for all you've done. You know, even just like a really, even a hollow gesture of like, you know, picture of him and Dave together on Instagram, you know, with the, you know, I don't know, a peace sign or a thumbs up sign or
exactly.
I don't know. It just seems like the nothing seems weird to me.
Yeah, it almost makes me more comfortable, but at the same time, I don't want to read into the nothing too much. I mean, it makes me think a little bit of that Jason Jones article where the guys were talking about how the relationship was getting better, or Bagley just said like sometimes that it's a little bit better. And of course, I'm sure his dad is just ecstatic about this. Yeah, to me, it's weird. It seems like the players just didn't have that relationship with Dave Jaeger. Like maybe that situation that happened in Golden State where Buddy got screamed at for making that three from super deep. Like, we wanted to kind of write that off and say, you know, that's just Jaeger doing the coaching that he needs to do. I think that that was almost a little peek of how the players kind of felt about Jaeger.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess kudos to this team for keeping that under wraps. If that is how the attitude was, if that attitude is there the whole time, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it. Did you see that? You did see that Marvin Bagley's dad put something on Instagram?
Yeah, and he didn't even necessarily mention it. I think he just said, like, thank God or something like that.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through Instagram right now trying to find it. It was pretty funny, but
he put some sort of religious thing out and didn't even necessarily. He practically, like, subtweeted the guy.
Well, he knows what he's doing. Yeah.
Right after the firing.
It says the caption is thank you, Jesus, ! Prayer hands. And the image is of a quote, a stylized quote from Romans 1:16 that says, I am not ashamed of the gospel. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. And I mean, we've seen, like, Bagley has put out Instagram posts where he said that, like, really hyping up Coach K, saying that he gave him all the opportunity and everything. Mm-hmm. And then quotes came out that Jaeger didn't like Bagley very much, that he didn't have the same faith as the front office, at least, that he wanted Luka, which, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to blame him for wanting Luka, but.
No,
not having
you can't blame people for wanting the rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Sorry for talking over you here, but I saw people doing this on Twitter too. They're like, well, Luke Walton wanted Luka also. I'm like, everybody wants Luka.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Everyone wants Luka and Marvin Bagley. They're good players. They're young, good players. He's going to be rookie of the year. If you didn't want Luka on your team, you're not a good basketball mind. You're not smart.
Yeah, agreed. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him wanting Luka. It was just more so that he didn't have that faith in Bagley. And part of, I mean, the entire fan base was like, why is Bagley not starting after the All-Star break? I mean, we saw Belly have a crazy start where he just blew my mind at the beginning of the year. But you weren't, I mean, Bagley was contributing to wins, and that became clear. and he still wasn't getting those minutes that it felt like he deserved and he's going to need for his development, because obviously we wanted to make the playoffs this year, but this is a developmental year, no doubt. And Bagley needs those minutes, and that's the only way that he's going to get better is time on the court. So hopefully Luke will be on the same page, and I think that he will. I mean, I'm excited for this just for the sake of it being a change, but in regards to their coaching, it could be a little bit of a lateral move in regards to, you know, X's and O's, the play style and all that. But if the management and the coaching is on the same page and they were completely opposite prior, that makes a big difference from the players to what you see on the floor, what you don't see that happens in the locker room, and just the environment. If the guys like playing for their coach and they're going to ride or die for them, then you go out with a different level of energy.
Absolutely. And to the point about Marvin and his minutes and his role, he did, you know, eventually he got a pretty big role. Yeah, he may not have been starting. He got a lot of minutes, but sometimes it did feel like Jaeger was making statements occasionally, like, listen, you know, I'm in charge here. I'll play the guys that I feel comfortable with. I know that I almost had an aneurysm after the first game of the season because Bagley played like 11 minutes or something like that. And I was really worried about it. I was like, does this mean he's not good? Does this mean they're not going to play him at all year? I believe Tim Maxwell wrote up a post about how that was the least amount of minutes that any second overall pick ever played in their debut. And to Jaeger's credit, he almost immediately bumped him up to like 20, 22 minutes a game after that. But it felt like kind of one of those statements where he's like, listen, I'm in charge and I trust my vets and I'll tell you when you're ready to play. And it kind of felt in the same way. There's a reflection of that in the last game where I think that Kings fans really wanted that 40th win. And Jaeger's like, listen, I'm in charge. I'll play who I want. And I don't want to put Buddy and Fox back out there, so I'm not going to. And, you know, kind of your feelings about it be damned. And I wonder if Walton will be a little more attuned to the feelings of the fan base and the feelings of the players.
Yeah. And on that Bagley, I mean, Bagley was sloppy at the beginning. He was not moving the ball at all. And maybe that was because he was seeing limited minutes, that he felt like anytime he did have the ball in his hands that he had to try and do something with it. But I felt like slowly working him in made him more of a team player a little bit. And then there were things he had to work out. And that maybe was a credit to just not instantly throwing him out there in that starting lineup or seeing 25 plus minutes. But moving forward with Luke, I mean, what are your predictions for next season? I mean, the 8 seed this year was 48 wins, and that's a 9-win jump. Is that what you're kind of seeing here next season?
I mean, that's pretty high. I think that this was also a year where I'm not sure that the number of wins to get in the playoffs is super representative of every year. That wasn't last year 46, and it's been lower pretty consistently in the past. So, you know, I threw a number out there on Twitter, and I would like to be able to take it back and change it as I can, because so much of it rides on what free agents are brought in, what moves are made, who's re-signed, who is let go, all that stuff. But I threw out the number 47, and I mean, it's a little bold. It's a little bit of a hot take, but I feel pretty good about 47.
Yeah, my number that I thought up was about 45. And I mean, this team could take a major jump. Like, if Bagley takes it to another level, like we see a lot of people do into their second year, Fox obviously has, I mean, all these guys are so young. And you see Barnes potentially, if he might rework, that would change the team dynamic a little bit, that you know he's going to be around for a while and he's going to have an off season with this team. I think that they could take a decent jump and maybe up to that 50 win mark. But realistically, this year was an overperformance a little bit, and it's going to be harder to win 11 more games. So I say realistically that you improve a bit, but I don't think that it's a night and day difference necessarily if you're looking at the record. My guess would be just barely below yours. I'm sitting at 45.
That's fair.
The next segment of this podcast, we are going to be doing throughout the off season to kind of eat up some of the dead time. We have player spotlights that we're going to do. We're going to go through and talk about different guys on the team, what we think their strengths and weaknesses are, how they can progress on to next season, breaking down their last year compared to previous, how we've seen them progress, what their value is as well, and a couple other things that we'll throw in there. But the one that we wanted to start with was Willie Cauley-Stein. And the reason I threw his name in there first is because I do not think he's going to be on this team next year. At least I'm hoping that he's not. And I believe you feel the same way, right, Rich? Hasn't changed?
It has not changed. I think it's worth exploring the thought of keeping him. But it's got to be conditional, and we can get into some of those conditions going forward here.
Yeah, Grant said that he would be a perfect backup big. And I kind of feel that, but is he going to want to take a backup role in a place that he started for, what, the last 2-3 seasons? I just don't see that.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect question to ask with Willie. I think that he could be a fantastic backup big. He's got the energy. He can come in and really change the game with his athleticism if it's used strategically against a tired first unit or a maybe weaker second unit. But yeah, like you say, I mean, it's hard to tell with Willie. I can't read his mind, but I would guess that he doesn't want any of that. I think that he wants to be the guy somewhere.
Yeah, and I kind of take that as what we've seen him progressing on. Like, maybe his touch around the rim has gotten better, and his passing has improved a bit. I mean, he has decent vision that is probably kind of underrated, but he could be a really ideal role player as a finisher. I feel like he has rim-protecting capabilities, just doesn't put in the effort, and especially rebounding with that athleticism, but he doesn't put a body on anybody, and he doesn't chase boards like you see someone like Bagley come flying in from the free throw line to get rebounds. It just feels like he's atoning himself to try and be more of a star almost in a way. I mean, before this year started, there was a quote from Kevin Durant saying, "Watch out for Willie Cauley-Stein." Like, this guy, I think he wants to be more of an offensive load.
Yeah, I mean, he as recently as a couple of weeks ago continued to compare himself to stars of the game and said, you know, I'm not being used in the ways that I could be used, that I've got so much more to my game and they want to, you know, keep me in a box. I'm not quoting directly there, but that's the feeling I got. And yeah, I mean, I guess his touch has improved a little bit. I don't really see it. He's never been an elite guy at the rim. We think that he is because his field goal percentage looks pretty nice, but it's for a guy that should only really, I mean, the ideal way to use Willie Cauley-Stein is, you basically, offensively, he only dunks. Like, keep him, like, he is dunking and he is finishing plays, like, within inches of the basket. But he's not a fantastic layup finisher, or he can't get super creative with it. He, in transition, he goes up and catches the ball and dunks it. That is what he is best at. He's fantastic at stretching the court vertically. Not horizontally at all because he has zero range. But yeah, I mean, that's great. And that is, like you said, that's very valuable. That is a very valuable role to play. But you can't be a starting center if that's your only offensive tool, really. Maybe, you know, maybe Rudy Gobert gets away with, you know, just being good right at the basket. He is leading the league in dunks. So that really is his best offensive tool. But he's also one of the best defenders in the game, probably defensive player of the year. So I will push back on the blocks. He's been so bad, so bad at providing any rim protection. You know, here's his blocks per 36 minutes across his first four seasons. 1.7 in his first year, 1.1, and then 1.2 in his second and third. This year, all the way down to 0.8. That's no good. So in college, this was a guy who was projected to be a rim protector in the NBA. I mean, he was a fantastic rim protector in college. He was putting up crazy block numbers at UK, University of Kentucky. And yeah, I mean, he was putting up like 5 blocks per 48 minutes, 6 blocks per 48 minutes, that type of numbers. And again, you know, that is college, but most guys that, I mean, he was putting up like Jaren Jackson Jr. levels of blocks in college, and then he comes to the NBA and just gives up on it. I know there was an injury, a hand injury that he went through that was pretty severe. And he talked about, he's spoken, you know, about it, that it was kind of traumatizing for him. And he, it does seem like he is worried about getting hurt, putting his hand up there and getting another finger smashed against the rim. That is scary. You know, I get that, but I mean, he's not protecting the rim and he can't stretch the floor. So that's, to me, that's what it comes down to. Those are probably the two most important qualities for a starting big man in the NBA, is defending the paint and stretching the floor on offense. If you can't do at least one of those, you have to be a backup. And that's what we've got right now.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that I see that he could sort of model his game after is like a Clint Capella, where he can run the floor extremely well, but he doesn't have that defense there, like you said. But the potential is there, and that's the most frustrating thing about Cauley Stein, is that it is all there. Like you said, he had it there in college. He just needs to care enough to put his hands above his shoulders. Or in that Houston game, we saw him shoot 4 or 5 mid-ranges after doing like behind-the-back moves and through the legs. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? You need to understand your strengths. And to touch on the amount of shots he should take at the rim, Cauley Stein this year takes 71% of his looks at the rim. And he's only shot 2 threes all year, 50%, so shout out to him for that. But 29% mid-range shots. Like I said, 71% at the rim, and someone like Capella is at 86% at the rim. And that's what I'd like to see it more at, kind of like you touched on. It's just he doesn't understand what his ideal role should be, and there's no effort on either side of the ball.
That 29% is probably the worst shots that the Kings offense took this entire year. He shouldn't shoot any of those. I mean, I guess
33% on all of those mid-range shots.
Yeah, so 0.6, you know, 0.66 points per possession. Yeah, that's horrific. That is awful. You can't do that. And I remember going back to the beginning of the year, there's a stretch there. I actually wrote about how he had picked up his field goal percentage and his effective field goal percentage and his true shooting percentage, all because he didn't take a single mid-range look. I think he took one across his first 8 games, and his numbers were nice. I mean, he was really putting up some nice stats in that first month. I actually have his month-by-month splits here. In October, he averaged 17.4 points. And then, you know, immediately it dropped down to 12.8, 13, 11.1, 9, 11.3, and then down to 6.8 in April. That's month by month. So, yeah, and I mean, look at his plus minus as well. Per game in October across those 8 games, he was a positive 9.5 and then never got up above 1.5 again the rest of the year.
Yeah, and then another thing that sticks out to me is the screen setting. Like, he's not big enough, and he's almost too soft. Like, he avoids that contact a little bit. And with guys like Fox, like Buddy, that are great at running off screens or in a pick-and-roll situation, and Cauley Stein should be great at rolling to the rim. His hands are decent. Mm-hmm. The screen setting isn't there either, and that's a huge part of today's NBA, and really just the NBA in general going back.
Yeah, absolutely. He could be – I mean, that's what he should be if he's going to maximize his own game, but instead he talks about wanting to be like Kristaps Porzingis, and that's not your game, my guy.
So 538 has a Carmelo player projections. And the players they compared him to, I didn't see it all, so I didn't bother throwing those in here. But they had him on a projected 5-year contract They had it at $33 million, only $6.6 million a year. And I feel like someone just banks on his potential because this guy is still super young. And I mean, maybe he puts it together. Do you think he's kind of looking at a more smaller prove yourself contract, maybe a 2 year?
Yeah, I think he's looking at a much smaller deal. I think if I had to guess what he ends up taking, 2 years, $17 million. That's my best guess. And it's not with the Kings.
Yeah. I mean, some guys that I felt were slightly comparable and their contracts coming off rookie years were like maybe JaVale McGee, who saw 4 years, $44 million. This was years ago. I mean, Nurkic a bit reminds me, but it's not even quite the same. That was $12 million a year for 4 years, 4 years, $48 million. And like you're saying, I just don't see him getting that money. I mean, there's also the terrible free throw percentage we didn't even touch on, 55% this year.
Awful.
Yeah, he shoots better from the field than the free throw line.
It's bad. And yeah, I mean, at least McGee was a block artist, you know? I mean, yeah. Willie Cauley-Stein is not that. Nurkic, really, he is a really smart player, and he always puts himself in the right spot. We don't see that with Willie Cauley-Stein. Here's some guys that I threw out there. So regarding the question I want to ask here, I want to do this for all of our player spotlights. It's kind of just a theoretical exercise, but basically what I want to get to is what contract value would you – say we had a team option on every one of these guys that we will eventually go through everybody. Say we had a team option, one-year team option. What is the highest dollar amount you're picking up that option for next year? Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's some guys to help with contract comparisons here. I went through and found all the guys, all the centers that made around $6.3 million next year because that is his qualifying offer. If we want to keep him, we need to offer the QO of $6.3 million. So here are all the guys that make between 7.2 and 5.1 as centers this past year. Dwayne Dedman, Boban Marjanovic, Montrezl Harrell, DeMarcus Cousins, Aaron Baines.
I will take every single one of those guys over Willie Cauley-Stein.
Agree. So to me, that 6.3 is probably a little too high, honestly.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to, like, at the end of the day, you know, I think I could see his value being 7.5 million at the very most. And it probably has to be given to him by a different team because, like we've been over, losing your starting job in Sacramento, I don't think that he would want that. So I am right on the fence about not wanting to even offer him that qualifying offer. I think I'm going to have to write about that this week and compare him to some of these guys, the Deadmans, the Bobons, the Harrells, the Cousins, the Baineses of the world. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a real argument to be made for just letting him walk.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't really want him back. Like we talked about, I don't want to pay that 6.3. And I think that even if we did have him back, like we talked about, it would be a backup role. I don't think he's happy with that. And I don't think that helps the locker room necessarily. And I mean, I kind of looked at some teams that might be interested. I was thinking like Atlanta. I mean, he can run the floor well with them, but everybody's going to run into the exact same problems that we had. Atlanta has some money to throw around though. They quietly have max space available. So maybe if they strike out, honestly, I could see the Lakers doing something dumb and taking Cauley-Stein. Like,
I would love that.
Oh, me too. Like, he seems like an LA guy. And
he does.
I could see the Lakers doing that. And maybe, like, if he wanted to take a backup small contract on a championship type thing, trying to prove yourself, would a Houston backup maybe? But I think that you and me had talked about this, that if Cauley-Stein is on a D'Antoni team, he's going to mess up so many times that he's likely riding the bench for a good majority of that game.
Right. He can't play on any team that has a good defense because the coach will lose his mind trying to play him. I think Atlanta is an interesting one. Maybe they offer that 2 years, 17, 18 million, and that would give the Kings great relief and they can just just decide not to match it and move on. And then there's that other aspect, like, you know, we can offer him that qualifying offer. He can take another contract. I don't even think he would – there's a real chance he would not even accept the qualifying offer, and he would just be insulted, and he would bounce.
Yeah, and then, I mean, maybe smaller teams that aren't going anywhere right now that are just kind of shooting shots in the water, hoping that they get something decent, like a Charlotte that needs a center, just hoping he can progress into something, giving him a small prove-yourself like we talked about. Mm-hmm. I just don't know who would even want this guy. Like, the Pelicans after they lose AD or something, you know? Like, I don't know where this guy has a place in the NBA right now.
I like where your head's at, though. I think that those are the types of teams that would want to take a flyer on him. If they could get him cheap, you know, $15 to $20 million for 2 years, I think, yeah, Charlotte, New Orleans, maybe Detroit. You know, just someone anywhere that they feel like it's fine. We'll handle his personality. We'll bring him off the bench. He can't get a starting job anywhere else, so he's just going to have to deal with it. I like the Houston concept. He's not good at defense, but he can switch a little bit, and he definitely can rim run. It's just like you said, he's Clint Capella minus the post defense. So, yeah, I think that's a good one. I think that is a good one.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm happy to not see him in purple next year. I mean, give me Deadman. Like you said, I would love Baines on this team. I know he's not actually available, anything like that, but we've touched on all the centers that we want going into the next season, and that's really one of the main positions the Kings are looking for, and that's because we don't want Willie Cauley-Stein back, and I just hope that the management feels the same way. I feel like they have to. I mean, we saw his minutes go down a lot towards the end here. He was seeing less than 20 minutes at times, and Bagley and Giles are that future there, and you're looking for another guy to fill the center void until they're kind of okay to step in and fully do that. I'm happy that Cauley-Stein has played his last minutes in Sacramento. Hopefully.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah. So the next guy that we got, I think we're going to take it position by position, is we got Kosta Koufos. And I think that he actually did an okay job this year. I kind of enjoyed the minutes that he was in. I mean, he doesn't fit the pace style of the Kings, but he played 12 minutes a game, a little under 4 points, averaged half the rebounds of Willie in less than half the minutes. He on 43% of the amount of minutes, he had half of the rebounds of Willie. Nothing to look at in the assists. 47% from the field. Doesn't shoot any threes. His free throw percentage was actually worse than Willie. He was sitting at 41%. We only saw him in 42 games this year. And I don't know. I think that as a veteran presence, he's 30. He'll be 31 headed into next season, that it's not bad to keep him coming off the bench. And as an emergency big, where if you need some minutes at the end, he can actually body guys a little bit. He has some strength to him. I think that he's intelligent. It was surprising to me to look that he's actually coming off a 4-year, $33 million contract.
Yeah. Yep. That's a big reason why the Kings moved their 2019 first round pick, was to make room for signing Kosta Koufos.
So that's interesting. Obviously, I don't want him at that value, but at this point, I mean, no one's going to take him at that value. And I wouldn't mind him as a 11th guy on the bench.
Yeah, I like that. I like that analysis. That's pretty much where I'm at as well. I think that I heard way too much talk this trade deadline and last trade deadline about how a team would want him at that salary, and that we could get picks back. No, we can't. To me, Kosta Koufos is, yeah, like you said, he's a totally fine backup veteran center. And I mean, like, deep backup. I don't want him in the rotation. Let me be clear about that.
The backup to the backup.
Backup to the backup. Absolutely. A depth big. I was calling very, very early on in the season. I was calling for Harry Giles to take Koufos' minutes, and I was getting shut down. And to be fair, Harry couldn't really stay on the floor. His foul troubles were really acute at that time. And Kufos was doing a pretty decent job, you know, just being smart, being in the right place. He's a fantastic rebounder. I absolutely think that we need to note that. But, yeah, not a blocks guy, not a steals guy, not an assist guy, that's for sure, and definitely not a scorer. I mean, he does not have much of an offensive game whatsoever, even, like you said, from the free throw line, 41% this year, 45% last year. That's miserable. And then, yeah, the blocks, you know, he people like to talk about him as being a part of that Denver team in 2012-2013 that was pretty good, and he started every game for that Denver team. But listen, you know, he started every game, and he only put up 8 points and 7 boards. Like, he was a very minor part of that team, very minor part. He did have some nice block numbers that year, but his blocks have decreased every single year since, to the point where he's no longer really doing anything for you in terms of generating, you know, playmaking on defense. That's pretty much done. He just needs to stay in his spot and get there and put a hand up and hope that, you know, he makes the smart play but not the explosive play, which is understandable. He's 30, so.
Yeah, and, I mean, aside from Bielitsa and Corey Brewer, whom we might not see back in Sacramento next year, he's the oldest guy on the team. So I think if we can have him in that, like we talked about, backup to the backup and just being a veteran presence, I think that he seems, from what I can tell, well-spoken and liked by the other guys, that just that alone is worth having in your locker room, because this team is extremely young. Like, that's part of my offseason, is they need some veteran guys, and I think Costa would be one of those. What was kind of the value you were looking at?
For me, the value is clear, and it's the vet minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll take that. I'll take that. I don't think he's getting offered any more than that by anybody, and I think that he'd probably prefer to stay in Sacramento. I think that since he's not going to be getting a lucrative deal elsewhere, I think that he fits in here. I don't necessarily feel like he needs or know that. I don't think that he like yearns to be starting anywhere. Like, that's, I think he's past that point of his career. To provide tutelage to these younger guys, to continue to help Harry and Bagley grow, I would love to see him back on a veteran minimum 1 year deal.
Yeah, I agree. I got no issues with that. And I mean, that's really about as deep as my Costa analysis goes. Like, I'm good with keeping him at that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. Let's do it. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, for me, we did the center position today. I feel like we could break the power forward position into a couple episodes, because guys like Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley kind of split that position there. And then we could talk about Bielitsa and Swanigan and Gabriel as well in that area. So it's up to you if you want to keep going through some of these guys, or if you want to call it quits here at center and say, you know, Cauley-Stein and Kufos, those are the only two guys that are obvious centers, no question about it, and move on to some Q&A.
I think that we can move on to Q&A. I think we talked about Swanigan a little bit with Deuce, and then maybe when we're talking about some of those guys like Swanigan, Gabriel, later Troy Williams, BJ Johnson, we can talk to Deuce again, or maybe Morgan. One of those two, because they'll probably know it a little bit better, get some insight. But I think I'm going to move on to the Q&A.
Let's do it.
All right. I think that actually the first question is from someone that you happen to know. So you want to go ahead and shout that one out?
Yeah, that's right. My buddy John Catterson. He is on Twitter. I got to find his Twitter handle to shout him out. But he is also John-Catterson on Reddit, and that's my homeboy right there. He actually, to give proper due here, he actually was the guy that showed me Sacktown Royalty. He was the guy that introduced me to Sacktown Royalty. And when I told him that I wanted to write about basketball, he said, "Hey, this is who you want to write for." And he, so I owe him a debt of gratitude for that. He is at John @John_Catterson on Twitter. So that's John, J-O-N _C-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N, give that dude a follow. He's awesome. He really knows his basketball as well.
Nice. And the question we got from him on Reddit, we actually spent a good amount talking about this when we met up. It's an interesting hypothetical. So, Buddy, Bogey, and Barnes are all sitting at 26 years old. Fox is 21. Bagley and Giles are both 20. And so would you consider trading one or more of the older guys in Buddy, Bogey, or Barnes, selling high now for a younger player that fits the timeline better with the younger guys of Fox, Bagley, and Giles? And when we touched on this, it was a little difficult to find teams that would want to swap their younger guys for one of these older, still new guys in the league aside from Barnes. I mean, because the teams that you're taking young guys from are still in that rebuilding process, same as Sacramento. So that was a little bit of a struggle. I mean, I think guys that we touched on that were interesting were like an OG Anunoby. I think that Toronto's in a win-now mode, obviously, and that maybe they want to swap some of that young talent for guys that can contribute more. Maybe a Bogdanović can do more for them off the bench. Or, I mean, there was Mikal Bridges that obviously we would love on this team. He's a great defender. I think he's a really good role player. But that's the same thing with Phoenix, where maybe they don't want a 26-year-old. Obviously, they were one of the worst teams, I think second worst overall this year. But it's tricky to find a situation where the other team is saying yes to dumping one of their younger guys for a 26-year-old.
Yeah, that's a great point. We talked about this a lot. I love this question because it is just a great hypothetical to consider. I'll give my real answer first, and then maybe we can talk about some of those guys in particular and how that would play out. But my real answer is no. I would not consider this. I think that, you know, John mentions the timeline, and there's a question of defining what that timeline is. So for me, there are two blocks of the timeline. One is the Buddy, Bogey, Barnes timeline. They're all 26. They've all got, you know, maybe a 5-year window of being at peak effectiveness, maybe 4 or 5 years. And then you've got Fox, Bagley, Giles, who are just beginning their careers. And it'll be in that 4 or 5 years, they'll be approaching their peak at the end of that 4 or 5 years. I like having two lines there moving as time goes on because, you know, first of all, no teams can compete with all young guys. That just, you know, I mean, look at the playoffs right now. No one is out there competing with all guys under 25. Like, we talked about how it was impressive, at least from my perspective, that the Lakers even got to 35 wins with essentially no one under 25. So to have these guys we can build with Buddy, Bogey, and Barnes going forward, by the time we get to where the Kings get to where they want to, i.e., you know, real contention in this league, they can be the veteran presences. And the guys like Bagley, Giles, and Fox, they can be the young core that's there that if things don't work out, yeah, they're retained. Maybe we do have to tear down a little bit, trade Bogey, trade Barnes, trade Buddy. But to me, you do that when they're 28, 29 rather than right now. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there's also the aspect of affecting the locker room. I mean, Buddy and Bogey seem like they're extremely close. I mean, there's pictures of them hanging out together all the time. And Barnes is just brought in, and he, everything that I've heard, has been a great locker room guy everywhere he's gone, even in Dallas, where obviously they weren't very happy with the contract that he was on. So I would agree with that. I like having the two different timelines, and I don't feel like we need to change anything is mainly what it comes down to. That I'm happy with what we have. We can move forward. I think the only team that was kind of young looking in this playoff spot was the Clippers. That stood out to me. They're starting two rookies. They have a second-year guy starting in Zubac as well. But they also have some nice veterans in Gallinari, Beverly, and Lou Williams, of course. And part of the reason they're there is because they had like a Tobias Harris throughout most of the year. And they're barely above the Kings. So I'm happy with where we're at moving forward. But like you said, this is a super interesting hypothetical because there's some guys out there that would be really nice to have as a fourth guy around Bagley, Fox, and Giles.
Right. I agree that you don't want to make a move just to make a move, because you wouldn't want to trade a player who is – you wouldn't want to trade a guy that is this good for a player that is equally as good, because that you're losing something in the chemistry. You're losing something you're adding risk when you don't need to, unless we're talking like a Scow for Swanigan trade where it's kind of like an upside, like hoping that mixing it up creates more upside. You wouldn't want to trade Buddy for someone who is just like equally good. It doesn't make any sense. You're just risking too much. I also really like how these six guys that are the core of this team, they fit really well together. You got yourself Fox at the point, Buddy at the two, Barnes at the three, could play Bagley and Giles as bigs, and you got Bogey as the sixth man. I mean, you don't need – it's not like it's a positional thing where, oh shit, we've got five guards and we got to – you know, we got to flip one of those for a big. This feels like a good array of talent here.
So then going with the hypothetical, though, who would be some of the guys that would interest you?
I liked what you mentioned about – targeting contenders, that maybe their guys are a little bit too young, and they would trade, because you want a guy that's on, got at least two, maybe 3 years on his deal on a rookie scale contract, because that's where the upside would be for the Kings. One guy that I just am thinking of now, because, all right, so Denver is the two seed. And obviously they need more horses. So they need more firepower now to compete with a team like Golden State. Would you have any interest in Michael Porter?
To me, that's another Harry Giles, where it's a little bit of a project and a question mark. If I'm getting rid of... Not really for getting rid of one of those guys. I mean, there's a lot of potential there, but back issues are no joke. I mean, to me, it's another sort of Giles situation where you're just hoping that maybe he pans out to the potential that he used to have, where I don't know if I want to have two of those on the team.
Yeah, it's a good point. I just think that Denver might want to do that side of it. Oh, from their side, I think they would take like Bogey for Porter. And I think Ananobi is a great one. Honestly, he might be the only guy that I feel like I would do a deal like this. And I could see it working for both sides where, say, we traded, say the Kings moved Barnes for Ananobi.
Yeah.
You know, it probably lowers the ceiling for next year for the Kings, but raises it in the following years. You know, I mean, even at that point, I just would rather prefer to have the three guys at 26 and the three guys at 21 and move forward like that. Anyone else here that you feel like throwing out there, maybe on a contender?
What about like a Zach Collins?
That's an interesting one. I mean, I suppose you need to move.
They need a small forward. I mean,
the problem there, I think, is you've already got two bigs that are 20 years old.
I would have loved, I mean, like a Shamit when Philadelphia still had him.
I would have loved a Shamit. Maybe a Zaire Smith.
That's not a bad one. Yeah, I think we talked about that before. I don't mind that. What about like a – I mean, they've been playing at a three guard, but maybe it's just because they don't have any threes and he might be too high on their boards, like a Jonathan Isaac?
Right. I do see him as a big, but if that were out there, I would think about it. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it's just a little difficult because obviously you'd be interested in guys from the Hawks, from the Bulls, or things like that, but there's no reason for them to do that swap on their side.
Right, like a Mikal Bridges.
Oh, another one that I think like is Minnesota trying to win now because they're really wanting to impress Kat. Could you snag a Josh Okogie?
That's definitely an interesting one. I kind of, in my head, I just don't think they can win now. So, but I mean, hey, they may have different machinations around that. If they think they can win, that's as good as them actually being able to win as far as a trade perspective. So that's a good one. Yeah, and I think guys like Mikal Bridges or Miles Bridges would be attractive from our perspective, but that those teams wouldn't wouldn't want to get older.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that was a fun question to kind of think on, though. I mean, I had never put it together where maybe we wanted to look at a younger guy like that. It's just a little difficult in regards to the other side of the deal.
I love questions like that. I could have done a whole episode on that, and it, you know, maybe we will one day just lay out some trade scenarios.
Sounds good to me. That'll be one of our Wacky Wednesday episodes. You like that? I'm just
doing
that right now.
Hashtag Wacky Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. So the next Reddit Q&A question we got, unless you have anything else you want to touch on the last one.
I'm good there.
Okay. This is from Timely Junket Zero. Would you guys like Favors as the future center of this team? If so, what would you give up to get him? So the contract that Favors is on right now has next season, if you're not counting this, at almost $17 million. And just in regards to not contract, but if I like the fit, I think that he works okay there. I mean, he doesn't blow me away, and I probably have other guys I prefer over him. I wouldn't say he spaces the floor with shooting 2.2 threes a game, or sorry, 1 3 a game at 21%. I mean, I guess that's better than Cauley-Stein, but the rebounding's there. He has a nice touch. He doesn't blow me away as I really want this guy on the team. I mean, there's a veteran presence aspect, but it's not all too exciting to me or attractive. I mean, how do you feel about it?
The fit is solid for me as well. If I could have gone back in time and put him where Willie Cauley-Stein was on this team, I would have loved that. I think that is, you know, I think that might be a playoff team because he does, while he can finish around the basket, he also protects the paint. You know, he doesn't have any stretch, but that would have given our defense a real anchor there in the post, and I think that would have really helped this team. I guess you can apply the same logic to the Kings next season, but in regards to him being the future center, I mean, how far in the future? If we're talking like this season, yeah, I think that would be great. But the future center for this team, as I will continue to bang the drum for, is Marvin Bagley. So I don't want him long term. Luckily, you know, he is only on a 1 year deal. I would be interested, however, with regards to the second part of this question, I don't know how we could get that done. I don't know what pieces we have to offer that I'd be willing to part with that the Jazz would be interested in. Do you have anything there?
Not really. Like I said, I mean, it's almost $17 million and the Jazz are in now that win now mode. But at the same time, they have a future with Donovan Mitchell. I'm not sure. I think that he fits well next to Gobert with them, and he's playing well as a four. I don't know what I would be willing to give up for him. And at the same time, like you're saying, I don't know what Utah would... To correct that three-point percentage, I mean, he's 31% from the corners, so at least you can sit him the... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading this wrong. He's 31% from non-corners, and which he's barely shot at all, and he's only 19% from the corners.
That's not great.
No.
Yeah, I mean, he fits their team really well. Really well. Not amazingly, but you can't really play him next to Gobert that much. They do, but it's not an ideal fit. I think that he is a nice replacement for Gobert when Gobert is off the floor. You know, I think the best offer that I could put out there, and I don't think the Jazz take this, is if we were to offer them Bielitsa, Yogi Ferrell, who is fully non-guaranteed, and they could just cut him for nothing, and some sort of series of second-round picks, or, you know, Frank Mason if they want him. And yeah, I'm not giving up a first for him, and I think I'm not giving up one of the core six. So yeah, I think Bielitsa might be interesting to them a little bit. Just insofar as he can stretch the floor as a big man, but I don't think that gets it done.
No, I do think that, like you're saying, I mean, Belly would be a nice fit there. But at the same time, I almost would consider rather having Belly as someone to space the floor, since we do need that, obviously, and then just chasing after one of these Deadman or Lopez come this offseason.
I can definitely see that as well. I think if you the Kings feel like they don't have a true center, say Willie is gone, say Kupos can't really play that role, and they want to find a true center, like a paint protecting big man, you know, I think you could offer Bielitsa. The Jazz save some money, they get a shooter, and then the Kings plug in favors at the one, and then they just go shopping for shooters, you know, just spend all your money on shooters in the offseason. I think you could find some guys that could do that.
Yeah. But I think just to answer the question super surface level, it's a no for me.
Right. It feels too complex, but it's a nice thought.
Yeah, agreed there. And one guy watching playoffs a little bit yesterday that kind of stood out to me, and I mentioned this to you a little while ago, that somehow was going under the radar that's going to be a free agent, is that Thaddeus Young. I mean, if you like Bagley at the center, and Thaddeus Young can play some really nice help defense, he's got hustle, he's got really good hands, and I mean, he's definitely benefiting from being on one of the top defenses in the Pacers. But he can space the floor. He's shooting almost 35% from deep. Great rebounder. He has a nice touch. I think that Thaddeus Young was an interesting guy that I hadn't thought of this offseason.
He's a great pull. I think that I don't know how I slept on him so thoroughly. Didn't even realize he was a free agent. I guess he just is not – he doesn't have much clout. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Pacers don't have much clout, no offense to them. And then on their team, he's kind of, even though he started every game, he's still like kind of like their fifth starter kind of guy. But yeah, he's a really nice player. I love his defense. I think he would be massive for this team to get another forward in there. I mean, I think he'd immediately become our best defender. Maybe Fox takes a jump forward, but I think he'd be our defensive ace. You can play the three or the four. Probably better suited for the four, but you know, he doesn't shoot amazingly well. Yeah, he has that. He's pretty much at 35 this season, but that's on a very low attempts per game, which I would need to dig into. But that tells me he's just only shooting when he's entirely open, which is fine. But yeah, I mean, you got yourself a guy there that could really help the defense, and that is absolutely something that I'm looking for, something that the Kings have been looking for a long time, is a guy that can play both forward positions and defend. So yeah, you pair him with Harrison Barnes, and then you've got yourself, you know, a guy in the forward spot that can always defend on the floor. You can swap them out, stagger them, whatever you need to do. Use Corey Brewer there still, and you got yourself a nice little defensive forward group.
Yeah, that's your guy. I feel like you're going to be heartbroken if Brewer's not on this team next year.
Absolutely.
I can't really blame you, though. I mean, he's a hustle guy. I like him.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I know he's older, but kind of the same concept. He's like Kufos, but still usable in a way. Or I would love to have Brewer at the end, like that 11th guy, where he doesn't need to be in the rotation, but for depth and for matchups, he can be. And then, yeah, then I'm loving that.
So, we only had those two questions because a couple of the questions from Reddit were directed at Deuce Mason that happened in our last episode, but the new thread will be up a little bit later today, so definitely be sure to go to reddit.com/r/kings, ask us questions there. Our thread will be stickied at the top, and check out the rest of the subreddit as well. There's good content on there all the time. Follow myself and Ivan on Twitter. And the Kings Pulse Twitter is @Kings_Pulse. You can ask us questions on there. I mean, I think that's it for this episode, man. Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
You just call me Ivan?
Did I?
Yeah. No, everybody does that. Everyone in my life calls me Ivan. This is the first four letters of my last name. But yeah.
Didn't even realize. My bad.
No. It's all good. I'm just having some fun. Yeah. Rich Ivanowski, Ivanowski NBA. On Twitter and on many things. I am building up a little bit of a website as well. It's going to be IvanowskiNBA.com, and it's going to have links to all these podcasts as well as other podcasts and some written work. I think I'm going to write about Willie this week and write about how much Willie has earned this next season.
Nice. I was planning on putting together something on the guys to watch in the playoffs as a Kings fan.
I like that.
So keep an eye out for that. Rich, or my bad, Ivan over here making big moves with the website.
And,
on the Friday, either way, we are going to have the Athletic cover for the Hawks. That is Chris Kirschner. And we'll be talking in depth on Dedmon. I'm going to compare our young core to his, who he thinks is better, who he would take in order out of all those young guys. I have a feeling he's going to put Trae Young at the top there.
I'm looking forward to that, man.
Yeah, I can't really blame him. You know, I'm going to pitch a Dedmon-Cauley-Stein swap. We'll see how that goes.
Poorly.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hopefully he just hasn't watched Kings, you know. I feel like that's what we're hoping for in these front offices, that we... someone like a Magic Johnson somewhere signs Cauley-Stein, thinking that he has it going.
Yeah, we can only hope.
Yeah. So that is going to be it for this episode of the King's Pulse podcast, and you will hear from us again on Wednesday.